Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. It's a program devoted to what we certainly hope and expect is the fastest growing segment of our society. To those of you like me who come to know that there's something dreadfully wrong, especially destructive, about the religious and political institutions, even the media reporting and military invasions and jaundiced economic schemes that are destroying not only our country, but much of the world. We realize that these institutions are the problem. They're not the solution. So simply rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic of our state is not going to slow the rate to which we are sinking. So instead of merely presenting the news, our mission will be to help you understand who is causing these tragedies that are besieging our planet, why they're doing so, and what we can expect these events will lead to over the next 5, 10, and 15 years. Typically in our second hour, although it'll be our first hour today, we're going to engage God on His terms through evidence and reason. Because it's one thing for us to explain that the nation as a whole is now way beyond the point of hope, that there's no way you can salvage your religion. It's another thing entirely to do that, but we're not going to leave you hanging. We're going to share with you where there is hope, where you can find a solution that is reliable, dependable, the truth. And that the truth will be extraordinarily enlightening and liberating, enriching, empowering. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free, 877-300-7645. I can't help but comment on the news this morning. Even though we are going to speak of Sukkah, which is shelters in the first hour today, but the news actually attempted to speak of it's written in the Bible. When it comes to taking care of those who genuinely need help, there is a lot that Yahweh has to say. Now, if you read Paul and you think that he wrote something that is considered part of your Christian New Testament, then you're already lost. Paul was a Gnostic. Paul was anti-Torah. He was anti-God. He was, by his own admission, insane. By his own admission, he was demon-possessed. So let's strike his testimony from that which we will explore. You know what? As we have focused on for the last month or so in Shattering Myths in our Torah hour, he is interested in one thing, and that's his covenant. His covenant is a family relationship. So you say, where am I going with this? Well, in families, the whole concept is we take care of one another. Parents nourish, protect, enrich their children. They help their children grow. It's the greatest joy in life. And when we grow as a family, we take care of one another. If a family member is injured and capable of working, the other step up. We stay together as families in the sense of we take care of one another. Now, Yahweh did have a very specific way of taking care of those who were poor. He spoke of those who needed help, and he typically would bring them, divide them down into categories. And the categories were typically orphans, you know, children without parents. Man, we as a society, particularly if we're going to emphasize family, have a responsibility there. And God was quick to tell us we do. Widows. Now, widows today versus widows back in the day that the Torah was written, slightly different. In the sense that today so many women work, but if a woman has a young child or children, you know, she has responsibility and the needs are help. But widows, the elderly and the sense that most of us should set something aside so that we can not be reliant on others during our latter years, but for those whose tragedy, maybe tragedy has struck, then that's a different story. And then there's a lot of people who are either mentally or physically handicapped, and society ought to do everything it can to help them. Now, what's interesting about the difference between government programs and Yahweh strategy is Yahweh did never, ever ask people to give him money so that he could provide money to those who were somehow poor for whatever reason. Money never entered the equation. God does not ask for money. He does not provide money. Yes, all of you praying for your next lottery ticket. Sorry about that, but no. Not God's deal. What God asked those who were productive to do is to bring into a storehouse wood, because with wood you can not only make fire, but you can make shelter. But you have to make it. You have to work to turn it into something productive. He asked them to bring in wool, because with wool you can weave clothing. But you have to work at it to make that happen. And he asked those who were tilled the land to leave a corner of their harvest available to those who were hungry. Once again, didn't go to a food bank where they could just pluck up the whatever it was and take it home with them. No, they had to harvest it. That was work. And they had to respect the land, because if they destroyed it, there wouldn't be something for them the next time that they came. He went further and he says, you know, we're going to make certain that people don't get permanently in debt and want to break the back of this the slavery mentality, which, you know, for many generations, look at the feudal system in Europe, for example. Of course, the slave economy of Rome and of Greece and of so many of these countries that we are wont to admire, they were slave economies. And what Yahweh said is that, well, I understand that, you know, borrowing and debt are fine things. You know, I understand how these things in terms of enabling you all to be productive, that's fine. But here's the deal. Every 50 years, all debts are forgiven. On the Yobel, all debts are forgiven. You can't be permanently in debt. You can't just grow further in debt. Every 50 years, all debts are forgiven. And every 50 years, all slaves are freed. Period. No discussion about it. You're free. And so God had a plan, sensible plan. And all of the aspects of his plan, too, grew out of family. Mother and father, monogamous, loving marriage, come together, build a home, raise their children, care for them, teach them, nurture them, enrich them, so that they can go out and lead productive lives and do the same thing. And when we do that, there are really very few that are out there on the extremes unable to take care of themselves. Now, in our society where we don't do any of those kinds of things, and we instead take money by force from those who are productive, and give money to those who choose not to be. Fully capable of working, just choose not to. It's a heinous crime. It's not only thievery for those who, when you're taking the earnings of those who have been productive, and it stunts the growth of your economy by doing so, but you destroy the character of those that you give something to without them doing anything to have earned it. You know, it's not like building a shelter out of wood. It's not like weaving their clothing out of wool. It's not like going to harvest in the field, which is difficult work. No, it's just, here, take the money. You destroy their character, their sense of values. One of the many things that we do that are inconsistent with Yahweh's teaching. So the moron in the U.S. Capitol who said that we needed to perpetuate food stamps, even for those without dependents, even for those who were unwilling to look for work. And I think it's 75 million Americans now that receive food stamps, which is money, by the way. For him to have said that it's a biblical imperative that we do this, what a moron. You know, it's sad how significant a percentage of our society has fallen for this kind of trap. This evening at sunset, we commence the final Mikra of the year. It's the destination that the other six steps lead to. It is Sukkah. It means shelters. It is invocative of us camping out with God, living together, exploring together. You know, if you were fortunate enough to grow up in a family that camped, or you were wise enough with your own children, if you're married and have children, and you on occasion take your children out camping, where you pitch a tent, where you cook your food over a campfire, where you tell stories at night surrounding a campfire, maybe even sing songs, laugh at one another, and have a good time. Tell stories. Enjoy family together. Taking long walks, exploring streams and lakes and waterfalls, beautiful mountain ridges. Just the smell of the air outside of a city, the sound of the wind. If you have done that, then you understand what God thinks is the ideal circumstance for us. You know, he began his relationship with humankind in a garden. That was our home. Why? Because in a garden there's so many things to explore. You are literally camping out together. You can look at all the various kinds of life, and it's just, life is such a wondrous thing. And the beauty of life, whether it's plant or animal, it's vibrant, it's always changing, it's exciting. That's God's idea of enjoying one another's company. He calls that the covenant, and it was modeled in Eden, and we return to Eden with Sukkah, with shelters, with camping out with God. It is the ultimate destination. It is what God is most interested in. If you're interested in camping out with him, not just for the 8 days of Sukkah that begin at sunset tonight, not just for the 1,000 years, which is the millennial celebration of the Shabbat that begins on Sukkah in 2033, but for an eternity. We'll speak of the way to do that in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. It's sometimes called tabernacles, sometimes called tents, sometimes called booths. The seventh Mikra is, as we talked, a result of the first six. Yahweh calls it Sukkah. Sukkah is our reward, and it's the summation of Yahweh's purpose. We are offered the opportunity to camp out with God, to party with him, sheltered and entertained by our Creator, not unlike Adam and Chawa were in the Garden of Eden. The final Mikra is symbolic of eternity, of life with Yahweh on earth for 1,000 years, and then for all time in the new universe that he is creating for our benefit. Now, there's something interesting about Sukkah that is that shares something in common with Passover. And that is that there are two fulfillments, a dress rehearsal and then the ultimate fulfillment of the promise. In the case of Pesach Passover, if you study the story of Yahweh to culminate his covenant relationship with Abraham, Sarah, and Yitzhak, Isaac, he asked Abraham to walk 3 days. The 3 days was essential to Mount Moriah, which means revere Yah. That place was awesomely significant. And to be willing to sacrifice his son, his only son, that was also significant. On the top of that mountain where God then told Abraham, do not slay the boy, for I have provided the sacrificial lamb. It was on Passover that he did this dress rehearsal with Abraham. He did so exactly 40 yobel, precisely 2,000 years from the time that Abraham enacted the dress rehearsal to the time that Yahusha fulfilled it, fulfilling Passover on Mount Moriah in 33 CE. exactly 40 Yobel later. We talked about the Yobel in the beginning segment of the program. The Yobel is 7 times 7 plus 1, or 50-year periods. 40 is the number of a time of testing and completion throughout Scripture. 40 times 50 is 2,000 years. 1968 BCE to 33 CE is exactly 40 Yobel, 2,000 years. By the way, 40 Yobel from 33 CE is 2033. That will be year 6,000 Yah, just as 33 CE was year 4,000 Yah. That's when, in 2033, that Sukkah will have its fulfillment. Now, if we speak of Sukkah, it had a dress rehearsal in the waning days of the fourth millennia of humankind. In 2 BCE, on our calendar, Yosha appeared as the sign. A child was born, but a son was given. Strict adherence to the prophecy that had been made in Yeshayahu. God was not born. The Son of God was not born. God is eternal. He cannot be born. He cannot die. The myth of Christmas is based entirely on the Babylonian sun god festival, where the sun reaches its shortest day of the year, and from that time, and it used to be December 25th, it's now, as our calendar has migrated, December 25th, but it marks the winter solstice, where the length of the days become longer, and therefore it was thought in these pagan religions that this is the time that the son of the sun was born. That is what Christmas celebrates. It's the pagan sun god birth, the son of the sun. And with Yahweh, he told us explicitly in the book named Yeshayahu, the prophetic book. We've corrupted that name to Isaiah, I suppose, so that we don't have to think about what Yeshayahu means. It's a compound of salvation, Yasha, and Yahweh's name. It's the name in the reverse order of Yahusha, which is a compound of Yasha and Yahweh, but in the opposite order. And when you come to realize that, Yeshayahu was predicting the arrival and the mission and the life of Yahusha. So what we find in the dress rehearsal for Sukkah, if you will, is the arrival of the Son of God. The child is born, a son is given to us so that we can experience what it's like to live with God. And for 33 years, mankind had that honor, that God, setting apart a portion of his energy, took on corporeal form and lived among us, perfectly Torah observant, so that we could follow his example, and then ultimately in year 4000, Yah, 33 CE, fulfilling the first four Mikra. We'll be back in a moment.
Good morning. Welcome back to Shattering Mists. Here's some of what Yahweh had to say about Sukkah, which commences this evening at sundown. It is a celebration of our relationship with Yahweh. It will last for 8 days. It is a 7-day festival with an 8th day. The reason for 7, of course, is obvious, that everything that is important with Yahweh is based on the model of 6 plus 1 equals 7. Man, who was conceived on the 6th day, plus Yahweh, who is 1, equals God's idea of perfection, that us being together is the purpose for the equation that he conceived to create the universe. But there is an 8th day in this particular festival, unlike anything else that God speaks about. And the reason for that is it is a celebration also of our affinity. And so when you recognize that we are given the opportunity for 7 days to camp out with God on the 7th invitation to meet with God, the 7th Mikra, this one has an 8th day with 8 representing infinity, recognizing that after the fulfillment of Sukkah. Well, we will camp out with Yahweh for 1,000 years here on earth, an earth recast in the conditions that were enjoyed in Eden. We will then enter a time where we will camp out with God for all eternity. Here's what he said. And Yahweh spoke. Now, it was not the Lord spoke. It is Yahweh. And if you do not know and use Yahweh's name, then I can assure you, you do not know him. And Yahweh spoke to Moshe. Moshe is a name based upon Masah, which means to draw out. He is responsible for working with Yahweh to draw us away from. And what did he draw us away from? The most religious, militaristic, the most political, and jaundiced economic schemed place on earth. It was a place on earth that whose economy was based entirely on slave labor, where the politics and religion were one, where the Pharaoh was considered to be God, where the government officials were priests. It was an extraordinarily religious, politicized, economic schemed place with a very powerful military that enforced their rule. Moshe drew the children of the covenant away from this crucible known as Egypt, this crucible of human oppression. And Yahweh spoke to Moshe for the purpose of saying, converse with the children of Yisrael. You know, thus far he has used Dabar, which means communicate with words, Amar, which means to speak, Dabar, which means to converse using words. So he is telling you, if you want to know what he says, you need to pay attention to the words that he is using. He then says, converse with the children of Yisrael. Now, you may say, hey, you know, I'm a Goyim, I'm Italian, I'm Greek, I'm, you know, African-American, I'm whatever you may happen to be. I'm Hispanic. You know, I'm not Yisrael, so this does not appear apply to me. Well, maybe you ought to look at the words, because that's what Yahweh is directing our attention to. He says, Bene, which is the plural of son, it means children, of Yisrael. Well, Yisrael is a compound of three Hebrew words. And if you would exclude yourself from what these three words convey, then feel free to exclude yourself from this instruction. Ish is the Hebrew word for individual. Sarah is the name of the woman who was Abraham's wife, who conceived Yishak, the first child of the covenant, means laughter. Who represents the mother of the covenant. Her name means engage and endure. So it's Ish, individuals who engage and endure, El, with God. So if you would exclude yourself from the company of individuals who engage and endure with God, feel free to tune out. And Yahweh spoke to Moshe for the purpose of saying, converse with the children of Yisrael. To say, on the 15th day of the 7th month is the festival feast of shelters. For 7 days, in proximity to and in association with, to approach Yahweh. All right. So, a lot of information here. 15th day of the 7th month. What's important here is that that months begin when the light begins to renew on the moon's surface. A moon cycle is 29 and a half days. 15th day of the month, therefore, is a full moon. Just like Pesach. Pesach begins on the 14th day. Now, therefore, full moon. That means full moon not only for Pesach, but also for Matzah and Bukurim. Full moon for Sukkah. So when we camp out, God wants there to be plenty of light. He is a fan of light. The Hebrew word for seventh is Shabi. It's from Shaba. It means sworn oath or promise, and it speaks of the number seven, which is essential. So there is a promise of seven. So this is the seventh month. The Hebrew word for month is Kodesh. It means time of renewal. And the reason that that is important is because if you want to set your calendar so that it coincides with Yahweh's calendar,
the first thing you're going to do is recognize that there is a time of renewal, and therefore the new month begins when the light begins to renew on the moon's surface. What did he call this this event? Did he say, this is a time for you to grovel and to worship me and deprive yourself? No. Did he say, this is the time for you to dig deep and make certain there's a lot of money in the coffers? This is the time for you to enrich me? No. Did he say, this is the time for you to make a sacrifice? Because, boy, nothing God likes more than a good sacrifice. No. What did he call this day? What does he call his invitations to meet with him throughout the year? The Hebrew word is chag. Means party. Means celebration. Means feast. So this day, this actually week of celebration, is a festival feast. It's a time to come together to party. You know, it's interesting. Our Heavenly Father, he has an aptitude to have a good time. His idea of fun is to have a festival feast. Loves good food, loves good wine, loves good music, loves sitting around the campfire and celebrating life, celebrating our relationship. If that sounds like fun to you, then by all means, join in. This is a chag, a festival feast, and it is of sukkah, shelters. Shelter is a protective covering, a sheltered dwelling place where families live. The tabernacle for the Ark of the Covenant was called a sukkah. Now, it is interesting, however, that there is one difference between sukkah, this tent and temporary shelter, and the Hebrew word for home, which is beth. You know, covenant, bereth, is based upon the Hebrew word beth, which is home and family. And the difference is that with beth, home and family, the home is permanent, the family is always enduring. With sukkah, the camping out together and the shelter is temporary. And that is because this earth is temporary. The time that we spent with God in Eden and the time that we will spend with him during the 1,000-year celebration of sukkah is temporary. Now, it happens to be 1,000 years in terms of the celebration of sukkah, but 1,000 years, when compared to an indefinite and infinity, an everlasting period of time, is not eternal, right? And so this shelter is a temporary shelter because ultimately we're going to camp out in the new universe with Yahweh forever. Now, he says that this is a celebration for 7 days. So sukkah itself is a celebration for 7th day. He's going to add an 8th day at the end of this discussion so that we also have an eye towards our eternity. So for 7 days, and it is la Yahweh. La is a preposition. Its primary meaning is to approach, to come beside, to be in association with, to be in a proximity to be in accord with. So the purpose of shelters is to approach Yahweh, to be in association with Yahweh, to be in accord with Yahweh, to be beside Yahweh, to be in proximity with Yahweh. So here the statement begins and ends with Yahweh's name. I want to make this point again. If you do not know, if you do not use Yahweh's name, you do not know him. You will not be camping out with him. There's only one name that God has. It's Yahweh. Those who have come out of Christianity and have come to realize that Jesus Christ is completely bogus by every possible criterion, and that they have come to know that the diminished corporeal manifestation of Yahweh is Yahusha, still sometimes have difficulty getting beyond Yahusha. Yahusha is less of a name than it is an identity designation. It's Yahweh saving us. It is a mission statement. It's Yahweh, set apart, diminished, corporeal, to fulfill his promises of
Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shavua. And that is so that Yahweh can camp out with us on Sukkah. So it is Yahweh. Your attention ought to be to Yahweh. You ought to be thinking about Yahweh. You ought to be communicating with Yahweh. Most importantly, you ought to be listening to Yahweh. Now, this is the final and thus seventh invitation to meet with God. This one is the actual celebration of everything that is important, us living together. It's interesting, I think, to look up how God defines words. The title of this day is extraordinarily important in communicating its purpose, and its purpose is what we ought to be celebrating. It's so many people will write me and say, what do I do on this day? Well, it's the thing, same thing you should do every day. Prioritize your relationship with Yahweh. Come to know who He is. Come to understand what He is offering. Respond to Him based upon the terms and conditions of the covenant and celebrate your relationship with Him. And the best way to do these things is to read and recite His testimony. And when you do that, one of the things you can do is to look at how He defines words. Sukkah is an essential word to know how to best celebrate this day. And when we return to Shattering Mist after the commercial break, we will examine how Yahweh defines the term Sukkah, so we understand what this celebration is all about. Back to Shattering Mist, let's look at how God defines Sukkah so that we all know what we will be celebrating for the next 7 days. Yahweh, this is in Bereshit, Genesis 33:17. It says Jacob. Jacob's name became Yisrael. He is the second child born into the covenant. He is the father of what became the 12 tribes of Yisrael. His name means to supplant one's heel. When you're really walking steadfast, if you're moving with purpose and you're not wavering side to side, you supplant your heel as you walk. And that is what this name is communicating to us, that if we wish to walk to God and to be in the center of His covenant, He has a very straight path that Sukkah happens to be the culmination of, and if you walk with purpose along that path, not floundering from one side to the other and going astray, that you will end up in God's home. That's what this says. Genesis 33:17. Jacob traveled to Sukkah, which was called the Tabernacle of Protection. It was actually written as Sukkoth in this particular case. And the Sukkoth speaks of a promise, oath, has been transliterated into to English as a promise. And so it's Sukkoth. And then it goes on to say, and he built a house there, a Beeth, and made a shelter for his animals. So there we have, he traveled to Sukkoth, and there he built a house. So it is a place of shelter, of protection, where a family would thrive. We find another reference to Sukkah in Yonah, which has been corrupted to Jonah. Yonah means that Yah's spirit is represented by the dove. That would not be surprising, since the book is really messianic in that it is dedicated to the protective nature of Yahweh's set-apart spirit. There we read, then Yonah, meaning Yah's dove or Yah's spirit, went out and made a shelter, and he relaxed in the shade. So Yonah, the spirit of representing the spirit of God, made a shelter, a sukkah, provided a covering, just as the Spirit of God provides us with a covering. It's an adornment called a garment of light. In Job, which is we've corrupted to Job, sukkah is a home which a watchman makes. You know, if you are observant, then you're going to make a sukkah, a home that is suitable for living with God. It is a protected dwelling place, a home in which people live. In Yeshayah, the prophetic journey begins with the daughter of Zion. Zion means signpost along the way. is left like a sukkah shelter in a vineyard, like a watchman's sukkah tent in a cultivated field, like a protective city. So if you want to know what sukkah represents, well, if you are the daughter of Zion, if you are a daughter of Zion, what does that mean? That you are the offspring of the shelter that that God is providing for us by way of sukkah, Zion being the signpost along the way, which would be God's words. In the vineyard, what is the vineyard symbolic of? It's the symbolic of the grapevine being rooted in the land and producing good fruit, and then that fruit making red wine, which is synonymous with the blood of the Passover lamb. Like a watchman, someone who is observant, tent in a cultivated field, in a protective city. That's places that are conducive to life. Yeshayah 4:6 says that a sukkah is a shelter to provide shade, a refuge, and protection from storms. Storms is a metaphor for satanic circular reasoning. Then in Amos 9:11, sukkah represents the house and tabernacle of Dod. Dod means love, which has fallen but will be raised up and rebuilt. God built a loving home for us. We have neglected it, and now he is telling us that he will restore it, and that is the thousand-year celebration of sukkah that is on our horizon. This then in Shamuel, which means he listens, 11:11. And Oriah means Yahweh's light, said to Dod, which means beloved, the ark, which is enlightened of free will, Yisrael, which is individuals who live and endure with God, and Yehuda, which means related to Yahweh, inhabit in covered shelters, in sukkah. And they associate upon open fields, and they camp out. That is Yahweh's definition of what we'll be doing this next week.